One day, while Ram, Sita, and Lakshman were strolling through the forest, Sita asked Ram, "Why should you and Lakshman, who are to be merely ascetics in the forest, take on yourself this task of protection? You have come here to fulfill a promise of the late king. The duty of protecting the rishis belongs to the ruler who is actually reigning. It is not for you engaged in penance to protect rishis. To kill anyone except in self-defense is opposed to the vows of ascetic life. But you have rashly promised protection to the rishis. I wonder where this will lead us." Thus Sita argued in soft and affectionate words while they were going from Sage Sutikshna's ashram towards some other ashram in the Dundak forest. "Bear with me, my lord," she said, "for seeming to counsel you. I speak but as a weak woman out of my infinite love for you. You know what duty is. But men, it is said, are driven by desire into three kinds of sin: falsehood, lust, and violence. Falsehood is unthinkable in one who, for truth's sake, has renounced a kingdom and is here in the forest. And as for lust, do I not know that you will not allow even the thought of another woman to enter your mind? But I am afraid of the third kind of sin. Should we kill one who does not attack us, whether it is a Rakshasa or anyone else, why should we kill anyone who leaves us alone? You are in a hurry, I feel, to give your word to the rishis. To destroy the wicked is no doubt the duty of a warrior. But can that duty still cling to you when you have renounced the privileges that go with it and elected the life of a recluse in the forest? The duties of kingship go with actual status. Dressed in garments of bark and with hair matted, you are now an ascetic, pure and simple. Of course, you know best. I am only asking you to think well before undertaking anything." Ram's love and admiration of Sita rose all the more for her misgivings. "Indeed, my love," he said, "you speak like a true daughter of King Janak. But Sita, did you not once say yourself that the weapons borne by warriors are for protecting others? When helpless people suffer persecution, how could a warrior sit still? When we came here, the sages complained of their sufferings and entreated our protection. They could not endure the cruelties of the Rakshasas, who looked on them as so much meat and made shambles of the hermitages. Did they not show us a great heap of bones to show what had been done? 'You are the king's son,' they said. 'Our troubles will now end as darkness before the rising sun. You are our only refuge.' Could we, princes, hear their piteous appeal and refrain from helping them? Every warrior has to do his duty, not the king alone. You are, of course, concerned for my safety. Even granting that what you say is right, I have given my word, and I cannot go back on it. They said, 'You are our only refuge,' and I have given my word to protect them. A pledge thus given cannot be withdrawn. What I have spoken cannot now be unsaid. You and I must tread together the path of virtue. How can we differ?" Talking thus, they went along the forest path. For 10 years, Ram, Lakshman, and Sita lived quietly among the rishis. In the great Dundak forest, there were a number of ashrams where the rishis lived, practicing their austerities and living their lives of self-sacrifice. The princes spent a month in one ashram, 3 months in a second, and perhaps a year in a third, as welcome and happy visitors. The forest was indescribably beautiful, with deer and bison, boars and elephants, birds and trees, creepers and blue water lilies. Ram was very happy these 10 years, the joy of association with great and holy men being added to his joy in the quiet companionship of Lakshman and Sita. When after 10 years had thus passed and the end of their forest life was approaching, Ram wished to have an audience with the sage Agastya, who lived in the south. The sage was, like Vishvamitra, famous through the three worlds. It used to be said that if all the wisdom and spiritual merit between the Himalaya Mountains and the Vindhya Mountains were put on one scale and Agastya sat on the other, the southern scale would go down by his weight. Once the Vindhya Mountain steadily grew towards the heavens and threatened to obstruct the sun's passage between the northern and southern hemispheres. The gods grew frightened and approached Agastya for help. The sage stood before the mountain, which bent low in reverence before him. Then he blessed it, saying, "May you ever remain thus," and so the mountain stretches low and long even now. Two Rakshasas, Vatapi and Ilval, gave much trouble to the rishis. The former had obtained a boon that no matter into how many pieces his body was cut up, they would all reunite, and his body would be whole and strong as before. Ilval, disguised as a Brahmin, would go to the ashram of one rishi after another and say, "O learned one, go over to my humble home and oblige me by accepting the consecrated food prepared for my forefathers." On no account, according to ancient rule, could one refuse such an invitation. The rishis, therefore, had to accept the invitation. To them, Ilval served as food his brother Vatapi, cut up and cooked lusciously. And after the unsuspecting guests had eaten the food, the host would, according to custom, ask the guests, "Are you satisfied?" The answer would be, "Yes, we are content." Then Ilval would shout, "Vatapi, come out!" And at the call of Ilval, Vatapi, reunited into life, would come out tearing the bowels of the guests. Many rishis had to die in this cruel way. One day, Ilval tried to play this trick on Agastya. As usual, Vatapi entered Agastya's entrails as food. Agastya, of course, knew this, but he was a devotee of the demigod Ganapati and had obtained the power to digest the Rakshasa. "Are you satisfied?" asked Ilval. "Yes, I am satisfied," answered Agastya. Ilval shouted, "Vatapi, come out!" Agastya, laughing, said, "Vatapi has been digested, my host." "What?" cried Ilval. "Have you killed my brother?" And he rushed against Agastya. The sage opened his eyes in indignation, and the Rakshasa was reduced to ashes. No Rakshasas would thereafter come near Agastya, and he protected the other sages also. Ram first went to the ashram of Agastya's younger brother and obtained his blessings before visiting Agastya himself. Proceeding south and approaching Agastya's place, Ram noticed the brightness of the whole region, the birds and animals playing about without fear, and Brahmins gathering flowers for worship. He told Lakshman to go in advance and announce him to the sage. Lakshman met one of the disciples of the sage and sent word through him. "Ramachandra, son of King Dasarath, has come with his brother and wife to seek the great sage's blessings." Agastya warmly welcomed the princes. He said, "I heard of your having come to dwell in Chitrakoot, and I was looking forward to your visit. The end of your exile is approaching. Stay here during what remains of it in peace. This place is free from the fear of Rakshasas." Ram answered, "I am happy to receive your blessing, and I thank you for your gracious welcome. But I have promised protection to the rishis in Dundak, and now that I have received your blessings, I must return to that forest." And Agastya answered, "What you say is proper." Then the sage gave to Ram the bow made by the demigod Vishvakarma for Lord Vishnu and an inexhaustible quiver as well as a sword. He blessed him, saying, "Ram, destroy the demons with these weapons, which in the past Lord Vishnu gave me." Agastya advised the prince to spend the rest of his exile at Panchavati. "May God bless you, O prince," said Agastya. take good care of Sita, who, for love of you, cheerfully submits to hardships to which she was not born or accustomed. Women are by nature fond of comfort and averse to hardship, but no such weakness is found in Sita. Wherever you are, Ramachandra, with Lakshman and Sita by your side, the place will be filled with beauty. But Panchavati is itself a beautiful spot, and Sita will love to live there, secure in the protection of you both. Fruits and roots are there in abundance. Stay there on the bank of the Godavari. The period of your exile is coming to an end. You will soon fulfill your father's plighted word.